You're in the Fast Lane on 101 ESPN.
Brought to you by Schnucks.
Habs win another draw. Orlov shoots and scores. The Capitals have tied the game 2-2.
I can't watch this anymore. It's over. Turn the lights out. Let's get the bulldozers in here and turn this place into a parking lot.
Here's Verana straight away. Goes to the far wing, drives the goal, and scores. Jacob Verana wins the game for the Washington Capitals, who spoil the night for the Blues.
That team sure did suck last night. They just plain sucked. I've seen teams suck before, but they were the suckiest bunch of sucks that ever sucked.
Well, what the heck? I can't believe they came out on banners there, you know, lost the game. I mean, this team just stinks.
I mean, come on.
I mean, this team is awful.
Oh, no! We suck again!
Well, better luck next year.
Welcome to Overreaction Thursday in the Fast Lane on 101 ESPN.
53 years, Randy. I'm going to have to go another year without winning a Stanley Cup.
Maybe not.
52, 53, what's it going to be, 60?
Ron, I'm
Is
looking...
Is it going to be 70 years?
I'm looking small picture here.
Am I going to be dead by the time they win?
Perhaps. The Blues are a point ahead of where they were last year at this stage of the season.
Yeah.
So they're on pace for more points than they had last year. They had the 2-0 lead last night, and everything that transpired during the day and leading up to last night is going to take a toll. We might think that these players are not human. Tony La Russa always said men, not machines. And if you think they're machines, then you can expect there to be no emotion last night and expect that everything that started at 7:30 in the morning until 7:30 at night would have no effect on them. But in reality, when you have an emotional event like last night, it is going to have an effect. Not an excuse, but just the reality of the situation. I was sitting next to Freeze Pops, Ranj, and at the 10-minute mark of the second period, it was good. I had fun because there was no Boston team on hand. But at the and he really loved, by the way, the Marchand.
Awesome.
It was great.
So in the video intro before the game last night, they're showing all the highlights. They're showing the series against Boston. And it was a very quick, like, two-second snippet of Marchand crying after the game, which was awesome.
It was
great. He went, oh, come on. And I said, look, man, let us have this. You've had your 400 championships in your lifetime. Marchand sucks. Let us have this for a moment.
So I said to Freeze Pops, at the 10-minute mark of the second period, I said, I might be jinxing things here, but the Blues have allowed this team, the Washington Capitals, only 9 shots halfway through the game.
I heard you say that.
And then they go on to have 15 for the period. They had 11 in the final 10 minutes of that period. And it was a different game after I said that. And it's not just me saying that, but Alex Pietrangelo pointed out. He said, hey, we didn't stay on our toes. And coach might not agree with this outwardly, publicly, but I know privately he knows that last night is a good teaching, coaching moment for him. Because even if you're the Stanley Cup champions, you still have to remember to stay on your toes. And here's what Berube said when I asked him about the fact that this might be a coaching moment.
I went in a room after the game. I normally don't, but it's a day off tomorrow. And I thought, you know, it was a big day today. You know, it was a big, big day today for everybody, you know, in that locker room and all that. So I thought it was good, you know, to go and talk to these guys about our game and, you know, what went on. And it's not an easy day. It's not an easy day. You know, just a lot of emotions. And, you know, I thought, like I said, I thought we started off well in the game, but it certainly died off.
And was it Barry Melrose that told us? He said usually the team that's being honored in a situation like this loses
tough.
The game.
Yeah, that's exactly who said it yesterday. I don't care. Like, honestly, no. I it did not matter to me. Once they got the points, and it's about collecting those points throughout the season. It is, as you said, better than their start last year. All I need for them is to do better in the first 2 months of the year than they did last year. You do better in October, November, and December. Let's include December in this. Really 2.5 months, I guess. If you come out to a better start and you're not having to claw back from down 15 points or whatever they were by the time they got to January and make sure you're not in last place when the new year flips, that's it. Just be in a better position than you were through the first couple of months of last year.
One thing I like about the personality of this group is that they do get Ronj, that they've got the target on him now, being the champions. And the players around the league recognize that they can send a message to the rest of the league if they beat the Stanley Cup champions. Even if you're Washington and you were the Stanley Cup champions before, you're going to take your best shot against the Blues. On Saturday night, Dallas is in town. You don't think Dallas is going to be fired up to play the Blues?
They are.
Absolutely. So the Blues have to be aware of the fact that they're going to take everybody's best shot, and that's why they have to play their game, because as we saw last year, if the Blues play their game, there isn't a team in the league that can handle them. If the Blues are forechecking, if they're keeping the puck in the offensive zone, not allowing the opposition to get pucks on net, there's not a team in the league that can prevent the Blues from doing what they want to do. But it comes down to how many minutes of the game can you pull that off for?
You know what I wonder? I think I know the answer to this question. But and when you are bringing up a Stanley Cup champion team and everybody on the ice is aware the Blues won, but when you listen nationally to people who cover the game, who have played the game in the past, but now they're analysts, there really aren't a whole lot of people picking the Blues to win it again this year. So in some respects, they can, I wonder if they can fly under the radar a little bit. Now, I know it's difficult to do when you're the defending champion, but I wonder how much players on the ice, their opponents, differ in that way from what national folks who cover the game think the Blues are in terms of being not the favorite to win the cup again.
I think that it's completely different. I think the players recognize that when you win a Stanley Cup, that you are the best. And the Blues obviously prove that. I don't think that because of that perception that it only happened in the second half in the playoffs last year, I can see how media folks would buy into that. But if you played against them, and even if you're Tampa Bay, even if you're Dallas, even if you're one of the best teams in the league like Washington, those players know that they're going to have their hands full every time they take the ice against the Blues.
And that's where I stand, too. I think that players a lot of times think completely differently than what the rest of us do. There are times where, you know, we'll have similar ideas, similar thoughts. Just look at one individual team. You might be as a player on a bad team, but probably think you're still good. Every now and then it's going to happen, though, that players know they're on a bad team.
Yeah.
And but in some respects, you can't do that if you are actually trying to win. You have to believe you're good. You have to believe you're better than everybody else. But I think the same thing, though. I think that everybody they face this year is going to look across the ice and see a team that just won the Stanley Cup, and they're going to charge at them. They're going to try and beat them. And especially for Dallas, who Saturday, is going to come in here, and that's going to be their Super Bowl. You know, it's going to be their Super Bowl, especially with the way that series ended during the playoffs. They are going to want to win that game. So I think they're going to face a lot of that this year. I don't think there's any particular pressure, though, on the Blues, really, going into the season. There are teams like Tampa. I think Tampa
has a tremendous amount
of pressure. Oh, my God, do they? Because you go back to their finals appearance, was it 2015, right, or 2014, whatever it was. That team, that looked like a team that was on the way up.
Mm-hmm.
That, oh my God, they're going to be a finals team for years to come now. And it hasn't worked out for them. And they got bounced in that first round without winning a single game last playoffs. That's a team with a ton of pressure going in. I don't think the Blues face that at all.
We always invite your mic drops with the 101 ESPN app. And Damian has checked in here to 101 ESPN.
Well, the Blues showed that they can't win last night. Let's tear down the banner, break up the roster, just, you know, freaking sell the team for all I care. They're terrible. Or it's game one. Let's go, Blues.
LGB. And, yeah, there you go. Thank you, Tony. Thanks for putting it in perspective for us.
I do think that banner raising a little premature, huh?
I thought it was good.
Oh, yeah, that was right.
The Blues do go 1-for-2 on the power play, and the way they scored the power play, I love that the left-handed and right-handed power plays, they give the opposition such dramatically different looks. I would like to see Colton Parayko on a power play, but it's game one of the season. We'll see him on the power play. But I loved Petrangelo from that right dot
yep.
as Curbs called it Ovechkin's office and the way they scored their power play goal.
That is the way I am going to view the first few weeks of this season. I'm looking at it through a lens of, well, you want them to win games along the way, of course. That's important, or collect points as they go. That's certainly a big part of this whole thing. But it's going to mean a whole lot more for the rest of the year, and in particular the end of the season. If that power play looks right, if it looks like it's making progress, that's the thing, and I talked about this with Stalter earlier. It is incredible, absolutely incredible, the Blues won the Stanley Cup doing it the way they did it. You know how many teams are capable of being miserable on the power play during the playoffs, but still winning all those series?
Yeah,
that's amazing. Do not do that again. You cannot live like that. They got away with one once. They can't do it again. So for me, one of the main things I'll be looking for this season, especially in the first month or two, is how that power play looks.
Game two of the season is Saturday night over at Enterprise Center. The Dallas Stars are in town. They've added Joe Pavelski and Corey Perry. And Saturday night, we'll have the pregame for you at 6 and the faceoff at 7, plus the fourth period afterwards here on your home of the Blues, 101 ESPN. Coming up, the Cardinals getting ready for game one against Atlanta down at SunTrust Park. The roster is out, and we'll break it down next in the Fast Lane on 101 ESPN. Earlier in the week, we talked about the potential Cardinal playoff roster and figured that John Gant would not be on it. He is not. Ron, a couple of surprises for me. Number one, that Randy Arozarena is on the Cardinals postseason roster, at least their NLDS roster, and Tyler O'Neill has been left off. I think, this is my opinion, this says a lot more about O'Neill than it does about anybody else. And this is a guy that during last season, the last offseason, the Cardinals said O'Neill will probably be our left fielder in 2020. If you're not going to put him on your NLDS roster and Randy Arozarena is going to be on it, I think that says a lot about the future of Tyler O'Neill with this ball club.
Well, think about when he would play. When would he play in this series?
Be a pinch runner and a pinch hitter.
Right.
That's it.
Do you want a pinch hitter coming off the bench who's going to strike out maybe close to a third of the time?
If he can hit home runs.
Yes, but you're probably looking for some contact most of the time in those situations, I would think. And Randy Arozarena is probably going to do a little bit better in that regard. And I think they probably are more comfortable with him pinch running. That's my guess. I think he's coming off the bench a little bit more valuable. I would like to see him start a few more games. And I know we talked about why Bader is getting the starts over him. And I understand it. I get why they're doing it. They're doing it because they know what he's going to give you defensively. They know that's going to be good. They're positive of it, and mm-hmm. they're right to be positive of it. And you hope you get a little bit of offense out of him. I think there's more upside offensively out of Arozarena, but they probably just don't want to find out now. This is probably not the,
right. not the time to do that.
I do understand it. I understand what their thinking is, but I also wouldn't be upset if they decided to start Randy instead. That would not bother me at all. It would be a bold move, but I don't think it would be as bold as starting Munoz instead of Edman. You know, that would be a really bold move because you know what you're getting on both sides of the ball with Edman.
So here's the way things shake out. Dakota Hudson for today and tomorrow's games will be in the bullpen. So you'll have a 9-man bullpen for those two games. Otherwise, it'll be an 8-man pen. Michaelis, Flaherty, Wainwright, and Hudson will be your starters. And in your bullpen for today and tomorrow, you'll have Hudson. The lefty, Hennessy Cabrera, does make the postseason roster along with Tyler Webb and Andrew Miller. And then your right-handers are John Brebbia, Daniel Ponce de Leon, probably a long extra-inning guy, Ryan Helsley, Giovanni Gallegos, and Carlos Martinez. The two catchers, Molina and Wieters, with Goldie, Wonger, DeYoung on the infield along with Carpenter, Edmund, and Munoz. And then five outfielders, Ozuna, Bader, Fowler, Martinez, Jose Martinez, and Randy Arozarena. The Cardinals just didn't have enough good pitchers to give themselves 13, and actually that gives them a little bit of a luxury in regards to having an extra position player on the roster.
I think maybe if Michael Wacha had been better this season, he's probably there instead.
And if he's healthy, his shoulder's bad. I mean,
if he's healthy,
he's on.
Yeah, I would think so. But still, you probably have a little bit of concern about putting him out there, even if he is healthy, just because of the way he's been.
Okay, out of the bullpen though. He's a guy that can give you three scoreless. The major problem with Wacha is his second time through the order. He might be a good guy to have if you have to pull Dakota Hudson in game four in the third inning. He's that kind of guy that can be a piggyback and give you three effective innings and get you to your bridge to Martinez.
What's really going to be interesting in this series is how they treat Andrew Miller based on the way he's been performing this season. He is nothing like that guy that was pitching for the Indians in the World Series. He's not that dude anymore. And how much of a leash they have with him. How quick are they to go out and get him? I mean, do they let him try and work through issues? I don't think so. I mean, most teams don't let you do that in the postseason anyway, even if you are 2016 Andrew Miller, but he's not that guy anymore. And I bet they're more inclined to go to somebody like Gallegos in a situation where they need strikeouts. Gallegos has been better against lefties than he has against righties this season. So you could probably use him in a high-leverage situation if you have a tough lefty to face if you want to. I bet they don't do that right away, but that's an option.
I am also interested to see what sort of confidence they have in Hennessy Cabrera.
Yep.
Because the first time he came up, he was bad. Went down, got things straightened out a little bit, and now he's pretty darn good. And they have some left-handed hitters that you don't want to have going up against a Brebbia, for example, especially Freddie Freeman. But if Markakis is up there, you'd rather have a left-hander on the mound. You want Ozzie Albies hitting right-handed for the most part. So I'll be interested to see what their plan is for Hennessy Cabrera out of the bullpen. I would think that he'll be one of those guys that we see in the fourth, fifth, or sixth innings. I wonder if you have a two-run lead in the seventh with Freeman coming up.
I doubt it.
I don't think you see him.
No.
I think you'd see Gallegos sooner.
Absolutely. And don't you trust him the most?
Yes, I do. Yeah.
I have a lot of trust in him. I have quite a bit of trust in Ryan Helsley at this moment. Andrew Miller, I really don't know what to think at the moment. But Cabrera is a guy he is going to come out of the game or come into the game probably in the fourth or fifth inning if Keuchel is coming out. I agree with you on that, but he's probably not going to be there. Go get a lefty seventh inning guy if they can avoid it. That will go to somebody else.
And to me, that's the one bold move that they made. And regardless of whether it's a Rosarena or Hennessy Cabrera, when you bring a guy up in September and you have him on the postseason roster, clearly, the manager doesn't have a lot of knowledge of the guy. Certainly not the 6 months' worth of knowledge that he has for the rest of the guys. And that's why I'm interested to see what Mike Shildt does. And Mike Shildt, by the way, loves young players. He didn't manage these two guys in the minors, but managed a lot of young players in the minors. And he can figure out whether or not they're ready for prime time or not.
I don't think this is really about concern over them being young. I don't think it's concern over that. It's just more of, do they think they're more effective at the moment? And some of these guys, you don't really know what you're going to get when the playoffs start.
Tony La Russa always wanted to know whether a player was up for that big moment,
right,
up for the challenge. I don't know that we've really seen Cabrera in that moment. We certainly haven't seen a Rosarena in that moment. So when you put them into that moment in the postseason, that's when you're going to find out.
Well, okay.
And they're talented. The talent is unquestioned. But Junior Fernandez has talent. We saw him three times in September, and he blew up each time. Sometimes guys, it takes a while if they ever do get to that point where they can handle the moment.
Seventh inning rolls around. They've got a tough lefty coming up. Cardinals are up 3-2. They go to the bullpen. There's somebody on base. They need a left-handed pitcher to come in. At this point, if you're the manager, are you going to Miller or are you going to Cabrera?
Miller.
I'm going to Miller right now. If it doesn't work out
for
me,
I'm going to Webb before Cabrera.
Really?
Yeah.
Just because of the experience?
Experience, and I saw his body of work, especially in the second half.
Yeah.
He had a couple of rough outings, but for the most part out of something like 24 outings. I think he was unscored upon in 19 out of 24. He was fine, and left-handed hitters had a real difficult time against him.
I do think Cabrera has the there's a possibility of him being really, really filthy.
Yeah. Okay. Oh, man, yeah. No doubt.
So it's a, for me, it's an issue of, am I going with experience in the moment? Somebody's got a little bit more behind them, or am I taking a guy I think can be really filthy and tough to hit if he can throw me some strikes in a big situation? I think the safe pick is to go with Webb, but if you really want to get ballsy, you go to Genesis Cabrera first.
And sometimes as a manager, you recognize that. Mike Socia did that with K-Rod in 2002, right? He came up in September. Francisco yeah. Rodriguez, who's turned out to be one of the best closers of all time. And they bring him up in September, and he winds up, could have, if you had an entire postseason MVP award, probably would have won it for the Angels.
I would not be afraid, if I'm Mike Schilt, to go that direction with the young pitcher. Let him. It happens in the postseason that guys who are relatively inexperienced just have monster appearances because they're so filthy and guys don't have a whole lot of they haven't seen them very mm-hmm. much. This team, the Braves, have not really seen Cabrera. So if you throw him in there in a big situation and he's able to throw you some strikes, that could pay off huge. So I would not be, personally, mm-hmm. I would not be afraid to do that.
By the way, going back to Tyler Webb, this year 115 plate appearances against him. Left-handed hitters hit 157 and had two home runs in those 115 plate appearances, a total of five extra base hits in 115 plate appearances, struck out 26 times. So Webb, pretty darn effective against left-handed hitters. And actually, right-handers only hit 189 against him, so he was pretty good.
Well, the bullpen as a whole,
in its entirety,
has been pretty good this season. It's been one of the best couple of bullpens in the National League. I'm fairly comfortable with most of what they'll decide to do.
And by the way, if you're going to the game on Sunday, make sure you get there early because Charles Glenn will be singing the national anthem before the Cardinals take on the Braves in Game 3 on Sunday at the ballpark.
And Adam Wainwright will be starting in that yep. game.
Coming up next, we will continue our NLDS coverage with former Cardinal and Brave. Our friend Brian Jordan is next on 101 ESPN. Welcome back to the Fast Lane on 101 ESPN. Chris Ronji, Randy Carricker with you. BT out today on his way to Mexico. And we head down to SunTrust Park and former Cardinal and former Brave, Brian Jordan, kind enough to take a few minutes with us before game one of this NLDS. BJ, great to have you with us. How's it going?
Always good to be with you guys, man.
Hey, the three National League teams that you played with are all in the postseason this year. This is like the Brian Jordan Palooza in this year's playoffs.
You know, I'm feeling really good, man. And my man Mike Sands just came out of the Cardinal clubhouse, shook my hand. I'm really blessed right now.
Yeah. So being in the middle of it, you must feel a tug in each direction. So how are you feeling before a series like this?
You know, it's pretty funny, man. Every interview I do, everybody's asking me, well, who are you going to cheer for, the Braves or the Cardinals? And I say, you know what, I'm sitting right in the middle of the field right now, but my obligation and my heart is always with the Cardinals because they drafted me first round. So, you know, but I'm cheering for both of these teams. I hope they both go out here and play their best and may the best team win.
BJ, you got a chance to see Keuchel, who went on that 5-0 run with an earned run average below one. And then in his last three starts, he wasn't that good. What was the difference between the great Keuchel that we saw and the not so great? And what do you expect today?
Well, you know, I expect him to step up to the challenge. He's been in this situation before. He's been pitched in playoffs, big games. I just think the last three games, he was more so working on different stuff instead of just going out there and looking to win games because the Braves had that luxury. You know, they knew they were going to win the division. They were in a great position where I thought a veteran like Keuchel, he's working on different pitches. Obviously, they didn't work out the way he wanted. He kept a lot of balls up and, you know, if he's at his best, he has that split finger dropping, staying down in the zone. And but he wasn't effective these last three games. But I expect him to go out there and be on top of this game tonight.
As you look at the Braves going into a series, sometimes it's difficult to predict what will happen in a best of five because it's so short. But if the Braves have an advantage, a clear advantage, is there one in your mind?
you know, that these young guys here on the Braves, they play with so much energy, man. It seems like nothing bothers them. You know, as a young player playing in big games, you think the pressure would get to you. You get out there and you try to do too much. But the way these young guys have accepted the challenge all season long, I don't see it being any different. These guys have all-star experience. And there you got backed up with some veterans like Freddie and Donaldson, who's had a fantastic year. Nick Markakis, who's come back from injury, and it's like he didn't even leave. He's been so good down the stretch. So it's a great mix that you feel really good about. Every position, I think they're feeling really good outside of Freddie Freeman. You know, is his elbow healthy? That question still lingers. Acuna with the groin had a chance to go 40-40 this year, so you hate to see him miss those last three games with the injury. That's my concerns with just the injuries. But other than that, I think energy-wise, what they brought all season long, I don't think that's going to change.
Well, we know both of them have declared that they're fine. They're good to go and play in this postseason, Acuna and Freeman. But how much of that do you think is them just saying, I'm not missing the postseason, whatever it takes, I'm going to be out there?
Well, that's the scary part. You just don't know. I felt like, you know, with a chance to go 40-for-40, you may see that once in a lifetime. So I thought if Acuna was not seriously injured, he would have played those last three games. But I know teams don't want to take chances like that. So I'm a little concerned that his injury is a little more than I really think. But Freddie hasn't been the same ever since that bone spur acted up 3 weeks ago. He just hasn't hit, you know, at all. He was 3-for-29 going into that Mets series. So that is a huge concern for me because they need him to come up big in that number three spot.
Former Cardinal Brian Jordan with us in the Fast Lane on 101 ESPN. And, BJ, I was a little bit surprised by the Braves roster, especially in this day and age that they went with 11 pitchers, took Ortega, the outfielder, and didn't take Julio Teheran, who's pitched pretty well against the Cardinals. But what you're saying makes it make more sense for me. Maybe if Acuna isn't 100%, you want to have that insurance with an extra outfielder.
Yeah, you got to have that extra outfielder in my eyes, man, because – you know, when NCRT going down with an injury and not playing that center field, you need a guy that can play every position. And Ortega, you know, the one thing that I remember during the season, he hit a huge grand slam against the Dodgers to win the series at home, which sent a message to the Dodgers. I think he was an important piece. He has speed. He can come off the bench late. He can do a lot of things. And you need that left-handed bat down the stretch of a game also. I'm not surprised by Julio Teheran being left off the roster just down the stretch. He didn't show me enough, guys, as a starter. And for sure, you're not going to use him as a guy that comes out of the bullpen. And he just doesn't have that electric stuff down the stretch of a ball game. So I thought that was a pretty good decision and something that I'm not surprised about.
If you're Miles Michaelis, how do you attack the Braves?
You know, get ahead of them. Get ahead with strike one. I tell every pitcher in big games like this, you know everybody's adrenaline is going to be pumped up. They're going to be swinging extra hard. That's just a part of the playoffs. So if you can throw that fastball for strike one, you know, now you're in control of the batter because now he has to hit your pitch. And when you're really anxious, you chase out of the zone. So it's going to be important for not just Michaelis, but the whole pitching staff to pitch ahead in the playoffs.
Brian, on the flip side, do you think that the Braves and Brian Snitker will approach today any differently because they have Jack Flaherty tomorrow?
No. You know, they're always going to be the same. And the great thing about this Braves team is they rise to the occasion against the best starters that's out there. And, you know, Scherzer, Strasburg, you know, those guys really lock in and perform well. It's the guys that, you know, are young, you've never seen before. They are real effective against the Braves, but you know I don't think they're going to change anything. You know, Noah Flaherty is the next pitcher to go.
And as we have seen so much here, you've seen it, you've lived it. Hall of Famers are vulnerable at this time of year. It's just a different game once you get to October, isn't it?
It is. I tell everybody, it's a different season. You know, forget about what you did regular season. It's going to be a different feel when you start this game. I mean, your adrenaline's going to be so pumped. That's why the strikeouts go up in the playoffs, because guys are trying to do too much. They're trying to carry the team on his shoulders and be that Mr. October like Reggie Jackson. But it doesn't happen easy. Those guys who can relax through it are the guys that's going to be successful.
BJ, I was just in Atlanta over the weekend, and I know it's like 100 degrees with 90% humidity. It's it can be a really uncomfortable environment, but there's a new ballpark or a newer ballpark that the Braves are playing in. In your experience, how does SunTrust, or how does it look like, just an eye test, how does it look like SunTrust plays compared to what Turner Field was?
You know what? This is... I wish I was playing during this time, man. I would have more home runs. I'm telling you, this stadium is awesome. It's definitely, to me, a hitter's ballpark. And it all depends on where the stream is going during the game. It's a smaller ballpark, but it's a fantastic ballpark. I think the guys love it. Guys love playing here. And I just think they put all the bells and whistles in this stadium. But they didn't account for that wind coming through center field, that little tunnel. I mean, I've seen some home runs go way out in center field, and I don't expect that to change.
So then how has the pitching changed to try to adapt to that, or has it much?
Well, the great thing about this is the pitchers made adjustments. They know they have to keep the ball down in the zone. I mean, guys are hitting too many home runs in this game today. If you keep the ball down, you got a chance of getting the ground ball and allowing your defense to play. And that's been the difference with the Braves pitching staff. You know, you look at some of the home runs this year on the starting rotation. They're down because these guys know the stadium. You know, they've had a chance to play a couple of years here. They know how important it is to make sure that sinker stays down in the zone and that slider away is down in the zone. Because when they make that mistake up, and we've seen Keuchel do it lately, the ball goes a long way.
Hey, BJ, a couple more quick things. Number one, in this playoff history between the Cardinals and the Braves, do you remember anything like about maybe game fours with eighth innings?
Oh, my God. Yes, I do, man. I remind myself every time I see the Cardinals play Atlanta, you know, what happened, you know, in that seventh game, it turned the field in the big matchup. And I knew we had to win in St. Louis, and we couldn't pull that off. And having to travel back to Atlanta really hurt us. So it's going to be a fun series. I wish the best for both of these teams. And I'm just looking for an exciting first round of playoffs.
And let's not gloss over eighth inning, game four, 1996. And you're in there against Greg McMichael. Take us through that at bat and what pitch you hit over the fence.
You know, it's funny because I just walked in the stadium, and that's the first person I saw, Greg McMichael, who runs the alumni here for the Braves. But you know what? All I asked is for Dimitri to come through so that I can get a chance to win the ball game. Dimitri came through for us, giving me that opportunity. And Greg McMichael was the guy that throws a lot of curveballs and sliders. So I was really looking for that change-up slider. And he left that change-up up, and I was able to turn on it. And what a game and what a celebration in St. Louis.
It was awesome.
How much fun was that outfield to play in with those two guys?
Oh, man, it was a lot of fun. It was, you know, I challenged myself against those guys. Who's going to make the best play of the game? And I think that pushed each one of us, and that's why things worked out for us.
Finally, Brian, these two teams, in my opinion, from the style of play, kind of mirror each other. With one team or the other, who's going to win and why?
You know, I'm giving the Cardinals a great chance. I mean, you look at that, the pitching and defense down the stretch has been tremendous. Wainwright really came around in the second half, and Flaherty and Hudson have been lights out. And, you know, Mikolas, you know, he knows how to pitch. He's going to, you know, this is a big game, and I expect him to, you know, to keep the ball down in the zone, get those ground ball double plays as the Cardinals executed all year long. So, you know, with the injuries of the Braves, I think the Cardinals have an advantage. But I think it may go five games, and I think Cardinals may come out on top.
BJ, would you ever schedule a vacation to start right as the Cardinals and Braves are about to begin a series?
Absolutely not, man. I cannot believe that Brad Thompson is on vacation during this big playoff series. So, yeah, He'll hear from me. Believe me.
That's what we like to hear.
Unbelievable.
Are you going to be here on Sunday and Monday?
Well, we're doing a post game show down here at the Battery while they're in St. Louis. So some people have to work, man.
All right. Well, either way, BJ, we'll see you soon, and we appreciate you taking some time with us. Thanks.
All right, fellas, you take care.
That's one of our favorites, Brian Jordan, with us in the Fast Lane on 101 ESPN. Coming up, Colton Wong is back and in the lineup today. How much of an X factor is he for the Redbirds? That's next on 101 ESPN. That is our friend Jen Langosch of MLB.com, who obviously covered the Cardinals for many years, now is a managing editor for MLB.com. And Jen grew up in Atlanta and has ties to the Braves as well. Talking about Colton Wong, Ranj, he, to me, can be an X factor in this series. And the reason is because he is one of the few people on both teams, and there's four, maybe five players that are capable of being in the middle of a manufactured run. He can reach base with a bunt hit. He can get the ball down. He can bunt. He can steal a base. He can go first to third with no problem at all. And on the two teams, you have Acuna and Albies for the Braves, and you have Wong and Edmund for the Cardinals that are prolific guys at that part of the game.
It's an offense that is able... they're capable of being, I guess, diverse. I mean, they could do quite a bit. This is not really a power team, which is, it can be a good thing. It's not always a good thing, because if you look at the teams that have done well lately in baseball, and we talked about this number yesterday, the top eight home run teams in the league, seven of them have gone to the playoffs. And home runs are still a big part of the postseason as well, but it's nice to be able to do it in other ways also. Colton Wong's speed will play if he's healthy, but when you've got a hamstring injury, those kind of things can aggravate very quickly and easily, and I'm sure he's pushing to make sure he's out there and good to go and doesn't want to miss the playoffs, a lot like Acuna is probably doing right now, and Freeman is probably doing right now. But for Colton Wong, who's had a really nice year, certainly he's a good player defensively, very good, probably should win the Gold Glove this year. He got snubbed last year, but you also need that speed as well, and I hope it's not something that he can go out there, try to bust down the line to first, or try to stretch something into a double, or go first to third and pull up lame on the way, rounding second on the way to third. You just hope that doesn't happen for him. It's all going to be about how healthy Colton Wong is.
Jen was on with Stalter and Rivers. Is that a concern?
On the field, though, it's all going to depend on how healthy he is, right? I mean, you think about the things that Colton does well, plays the field exceptionally well, runs the bases very well, brings an element of speed. He is coming off an injury, guys, though, that was a lower body injury, a hamstring injury. Is there going to be hesitation in him as he moves around the field, or are there going to be limitations for him? And can he stay healthy? I mean, we've seen through the years how fickle these injuries can be. One bad tweak, and he's potentially out for the rest of October.
I feel like Jen and I are sharing a brain.
Yeah, I think so. But if you're the Cardinals, does it make sense to even have him out there when if he wasn't 100%? He claimed he was ready to go on Sunday. You do have Matt Carpenter, so you could have played Edmund at second and Carpenter at third. So if Wong is showing you anything less than 100%, is there any reason to play him?
You absolutely don't risk it. Because if he's not... and again, I don't know how many players are actually 100% this time of year, but if he's in a situation where it could very easily be re-injured just by making one wrong movement, if he's more susceptible to it than most other, anybody can get hurt at any time, but somebody who just had a hamstring injury is more likely to injure their hamstring than somebody who has not injured their hamstring already. So is he close to that, or would another 4 or 5 days do him well? Would it be a good idea to not push this for him because you have Carpenter, who, by the way, did look pretty good in the month of September. In limited starts and limited playing time, he was hitting. Had a couple of big hits for them toward the end of the year. Had him in Chicago. He had him during the last series against the Cubs at home as well. So would you feel more comfortable having him out there, having Edmund play second base? At this point, if Colton Wong is not as close to 100% as possible, for me, the answer is yes.
And tomorrow, regardless of what happens today, because you have a strikeout pitcher in Flaherty going, as opposed to a pitch-to-contact guy like Michaelis today, I might have Edmund at second and Carpenter at third tomorrow, going against the right-hander. But today, with the need for defense, I think the Cardinals are doing the right thing in playing Colton Wong.
As long as he is not
compromised.
That's it. It's all about compromise, and it's all about whether or not the injury is on the verge of being aggravated. That's all it comes down to for me. If the team doctors feel like he should be okay and he's past that point where he's really susceptible to having it happen to him again, which I don't know how you could be at this point because it's, what, September 20th, I think, mm-hmm. is when he went down, right?
Right.
September 19th or 20th, somewhere in there. That's it for me. It's all about whether or not he's close to re-aggravating that thing. If they feel like he should be fine, then yeah, put him out there. But if there's any doubt whatsoever, I'm not doing it.
We're going to get a half hour before the game update from Mark Saxon, our Cardinal insider from The Athletic, next on 101 ESPN. Ron and Randy with you. BT is out. He is in Cabo. He's in Mexico for the next week during this NLDS. But we go to Atlanta, and standing by is our Cardinal insider from The Athletic, the one and only Mark Saxon. How are you, sir?
I'm doing great, although my guess is it's hotter here than in Cabo right now.
I would think so. I want to start with this, and you tweeted this a few minutes ago. Like you, I spent many a Friday night in my and a holiday evening in my childhood at Chris's on Lindbergh.
Oh, that's beautiful. My dad used to be friends with the guy who owned it, Steve Lekametrius. I don't know if the family still does, but yeah, we would go on special occasions, and my goodness. That prime rib will fill it up, won't it?
Oh, no doubt about it. We had a waiter named Ralph that waited on my parents regularly, and he was a great guy, and that's one of the reasons my parents kept going back. So it's interesting how St. Louis life kind of intertwines with almost everybody.
And I think it's cool that he gave a shout-out to a local restaurant versus some kind of, you know, chain steakhouse or something. Yeah. So I dug that.
Yeah, John Mozeliak said that today down in Atlanta. How about that?
Chris's is a great spot. I love it.
That's fantastic.
We still go there quite a bit, actually. All right, so let's start with this. This is a series between two teams that a lot of people think is one of the more evenly matched series that are remaining of the division series. What do you think as we go into this best of five?
I agree that it's definitely more evenly matched than the others. On paper, you know, obviously Atlanta won a few more games. I think you'll kind of be able to tell maybe early in the series just which style is prevailing because while their win totals were somewhat close, they go about it in very different ways. Atlanta absolutely mashes, you know. They have a leadoff hitter, Ronald Acuna Jr., with 41 home runs, so that kind of tells you how they roll. And the Cardinals are the opposite. They're a run prevention team. We've all seen it all summer with some frustrating at-bats at times, but they keep other teams in the ballpark for the most part about as well as anybody. And that's what they're going to be looking to do. So it's going to be kind of a run prevention team against a big kind of brawny run scoring team. We'll see who prevails.
Mark Saxon with us in the Fast Lane on 101 ESPN. We kind of thought that Tyler O'Neill would get the nod over a Rosarena. Why do you think a Rosarena is on the roster?
I thought he might as well. I thought Tyler O'Neill might as well because he brings a little more power and almost equal speed. You know, people would be surprised if they knew how fast Tyler O'Neill is. I think a Rosarena is just a guy who they grew to really like in that role. If you saw throughout September, he used him in those pinch running situations and sometimes for some defense late. So I think they just thought he fit with this group a little bit better. They have, you know, some pretty big bats to bring off the bench between Matt Carpenter and Jose Martinez. And I think they just wanted to get a little more speed and athleticism onto the roster.
Do you think we should read anything into Tyler O'Neill's future because he's not on the roster?
That's a really good question. I think if he were a veteran guy, you could have sort of bruised his feelings enough to the point where you'd have to maybe move him on to another organization. I don't think at this stage of his career, he can afford to pout or to be difficult about it anyway. He's got to establish himself mm-hmm. as a major league player. He hasn't done that yet. So I think for him, if he were to do that, it'd be the worst thing he could possibly do.
All right, so going into this series, and it's something we're going to talk about here before the show comes to an end. If this, what do the Cardinals absolutely have to do? What aspect of their game is going to have to be on in order for this series to go their way?
I would point to two things. I think there's a real opportunity to take extra bases on these Braves catchers who have not thrown particularly well this year. Whether that's on them or that's on a pitching staff that might be a little slower to the plate, I'm not sure. But the throwing numbers were not great for Brian McCann or Tyler Flowers. They also had a fair number of wild pitches and pass balls. I think the Cardinals have a clear edge defensively at catcher, of course. But also, if Colton Wong truly is 100% and healthy and able to create a little bit of disturbance on the bases as well as some other guys, maybe even a Randy Arozarena or Dexter Fowler, they could take some extra bases and maybe win some low-scoring games that way. On the other hand, the other key for the Cardinals absolutely is how healthy is Freddie Freeman, because as I said, I think the Braves are going to win like everybody, most teams win now, and that's by trying to hit more home runs than you do. And if Freddie Freeman isn't right, and if he's got a, he's been playing with a bone spur in his right elbow, I look for the Cardinals pitchers to just pound him inside, realizing that he can't necessarily extend his arms and hit those balls to left field anymore. So I think those right there are a couple keys to look for.
Hey, Mark, you mentioned, and Mike Shildt, you said on Twitter, Mike Shildt said that he wouldn't hesitate to go get Michaelis early if he's struggling or if he needs to pinch hit because he has Hudson in the bullpen. What are you thinking about Hudson? 35, 40 pitches tops?
Yeah, something like that. I mean, he's going in game four, they announced. So that will be, what, on Monday, I believe, in St. Louis. So that, you know, he's got a few days. Yeah, I would think something in that range, Randy, which could, you know, the way as efficient as he is, if he's getting ground balls, that could be, that could give you three or four innings potentially, which does allow you at the first sign of trouble with Miles Michaelis to get him out there. Or if you get some action going at the bottom of the lineup, bring a pinch hitter out. You know, if you really look at this Cardinals rotation, it's interesting. They've got one absolute stud. We all know that is Jack Flaherty. They have to maximize his impact on this series. But the rest of the guys have all kind of been in a, you know, in that similar range. You know, good number three starter type guys. And that's, and I asked Mike Shildt today, you know, why Adam Wainwright in game three and Hudson in game four. He basically said, look, very similar seasons, but when in doubt, if it's close, go with the guy who's been great in the postseason. And so I think that's why it's Adam Wainwright. But also it does create that opportunity of using Hudson, who was very good as a reliever last year, to get some key outs for you or to give you some length.
I want you to try to predict some unpredictability for me. When talking about young players, Tommy Edman, you mentioned Jack Flaherty, Dakota Hudson. You've got a lot of guys who are in the bullpen too, who are relatively inexperienced, and you don't really know how they're going to do when you get to a moment like this, when you get to the playoffs. Who do you think will thrive of what the Cardinals have of their young players? Who do you expect is more likely to thrive as the playoffs go on?
I really suspect that we'll see Tommy Edman be the same guy we've seen this entire last 3 months or whatever it's been. I just think he's kind of a grinder type player who the game's not going to change a whole lot for him. He's been having to fight. I mean, he's a whatever he is, 5'9", you know, slightly built guy who's been busting his butt to get where he is. I don't think this will be that different for him. I think there's a lot of pressure on Jack Flaherty because everyone knows that he's kind of the Cardinals. If they have an edge in this series, it's that they have the best pitcher going for 3 months now in baseball, and I mean the best. So there could be some pressure on him, but, you know, we saw him do it all month. I really don't think nerves are going to be a big issue in this series for either team. I don't expect Ronald Acuna to freeze up in the light. I just, in my experience covering this game, for whatever reason, young players are coming up and just absolutely showing what they can do. I just don't see the signs of the jitters that we used to see in this game.
Mark, have fun down there. Thanks so much for the time. We do appreciate it. We'll talk to you soon.
Okay, gentlemen. Have a good afternoon.
You too. That is Mark Saxon from The Athletic on 101 ESPN. We're headed down the stretch of this edition of The Fast Lane as we head towards the pregame for the Cards and the Braves from ESPN Radio. What will be the deciding factor between the Cardinals and the Braves in this series? We'll break that down for you next on 101 ESPN. That is the Cardinals skipper, Mike Schilt. Pretty obvious what the Cardinals are intending to do in this National League Division Series. One of the things, Ronj, that Miles Michaelis did so well last year that he didn't do as well this year is control the count. Part of what made him so efficient last year was getting strike one, and he just hasn't been as good at that aspect of pitching as he was in 2018.
So I know this sounds like a pretty tired trope when it comes to being successful as a pitcher in the postseason. Get ahead in the count. And yes, that sounds like it's obvious. Everybody wants to do it. But there are some guys who absolutely have to, otherwise they're going to be in trouble. Miles Michaelis is one of those dudes. He has to get ahead. He has to be closer to what he was in 2018. And you're right about that. That's a thing he was awesome at doing, in particular early in the year. Getting ahead in counts, he hardly ever fell behind. It's tough for him to work out of those holes. So that's what he has to do. There is no maybe here. Like, this is a must. Unless the Cardinals' offense is absolutely going to explode on Dallas Keuchel, this guy's going to have to pitch tight tonight and get out ahead of every hitter he faces.
So that's one thing to keep an eye on with Michaelis is he getting ahead in the count? That'll allow him to control the count. And then the other aspect for him is the efficiency, not nibbling. And I really do believe that he was so affected mentally by the juiced ball that he nibbled a lot more than he used to. He just needs to go after their hitters and allow his defense to do their job.
Well, it's been one of the best defenses in the defenses? Is that the right
defenses?
Way to say it? Defenses, how about that? Mm-hmm. It's one of the best defenses in baseball all season. You can argue they are the best, but they're certainly in the top two. Diamondbacks have been pretty good this year. Well, during the regular season they were. But they've got to continue to do that, help out your pitching staff. The Braves are also a pretty good defensive team
as well.
So we're not talking about a bunch of guys who kick the ball around. They're also really good. So this is defense is going to be a big part of this series, I think, as well. I know you said that you could see this very easily being 7-5 in terms of runs.
In the first game.
Yeah, that could happen. It could. But I think the series overall, you're looking probably at a fairly low scoring event, especially from the Cardinals side. They're going to have to pitch tight because the Braves offense has the capability of exploding. And I know the Cardinals does too, but not to the extent that the Braves do. And the Braves, and by the way, both teams are playing in a pretty good ballpark. It's hot. It is humid down there. I know the park factors aren't really heavily weighted in favor of offense at SunTrust, but it can happen, especially when it's hot and humid like it is there today.
I agree with you 100%, by the way, about the scoring. I just think because of the year Michaelis has had and the stretch run and the large sample size of Dallas Keuchel, I do think this will be a game where the scoring is higher. And the Cardinals are going to have to we've talked a lot about manufacturing runs, and I'm talking about their ability to do that if the game is 3-3 in the top of the eighth or the top of the ninth inning. But ordinarily, when the Cardinals do score, it's when their guys are hitting home runs, right?
Yes.
And you're going to have people like Paul Goldschmidt, Paul DeJong, Marcell Ozuna, Yadi. Those guys are going to have to step up and hit home runs because ultimately it is a sport of home runs now.
Yes, and that includes the postseason as well.
Yep.
So this is something that Mike Petriello wrote in for MLB.com a few days ago, and I think this is really important. There is this idea that you have to play small ball and that's the way to win, but it isn't necessarily true even in the postseason. Here's what he wrote. Scoring decreases in October. That's true across the board. Home runs drop at a lower rate, however, than scoring does. So scoring drops, but home runs don't drop quite as dramatically as scoring does, which means the percentage of runs scored in the postseason based off the home run is higher than it is during the regular season. So what that really means is home runs are even more important in the postseason. So the Cardinals are going to have to find that. And also think of it this way. One of the things you always hear is you're facing the absolute best pitching baseball has to offer in the playoffs. If that's true, what's more likely? You get a walk and then a guy puts a ball in the seats in the same inning, or you get a single and a single, then a double, then a single, and you wind up scoring three or four runs on a string of hits against a really good pitcher. That is much less likely to happen than you get a couple of guys on base and somebody puts a ball in the stands. It's more likely a three-run home run decides a game than one big inning where it's just a bunch of you're chipping away with base hits and doubles.
By the way, storyline here. Dexter Fowler is from the greater Atlanta area. He led an Atlanta area team to a high school championship when he was in high school. So if Dexter Fowler does things, it's not going to be because he's fired up about being able to play in Atlanta, but it will provide us with a narrative for the series. Meanwhile, there's been a lot of belief, one narrative, that the Braves don't have enough experience to succeed at this level, even though essentially this exact same team, sans Josh Donaldson, who has a ton of postseason experience, was in the playoffs last year. John Smoltz, former Brave, who's down in Atlanta, talked about that thought process.
There's value in that critic, but at the same time, you have experience of the back-to-back campaigns of success and growth. And those young starters have had the influence of a Dallas Keuchel, have had the influence now of a year and success. Successful campaigns can answer a lot of questions for a young player. It's more important for a young player to have success going into something bigger than they're capable of knowing.
Here's the thing, and I was one of those people that back in the day, I thought experience played a big role. But now you have 15-year-olds that are traveling from Texas to Minnesota to play in the summer. You have 17-year-olds that are in the Cape Cod League that are playing big games there. People that are playing in big stadiums. I don't think young players in general are at all fazed by being on the big stage and seeing the second and third decks and being on TV.
Yeah, I don't think it's as big of a deal as maybe it used to be when you would spend a lot of time in the minor leagues before you get promoted. And that still does happen for players. But some of the best are graduating quickly, or they're not really spending it. You might be a player who signed from overseas and you spend no time in the minor leagues. Mm-hmm. And maybe you've played in a pretty big ballpark wherever you come from, if it's Venezuela, Cuba, or whatever, and then you make your way here, it's still not Major League Baseball, but they're jumping right into it, and they're able to handle it. So I think if all things are equal, you have two players with same skill sets, they've got similar numbers and peripherals across the board, then I would lean toward the experience. But I don't know if it matters as much as it used to.
I look at that team and I can't think of a single player where I say, boy, that guy, or the Cardinals for that matter, who have young players too, where I say that guy looks like he might be overwhelmed in the postseason. Acuna is not going to be overwhelmed. Albies is not going to be overwhelmed. Soroka is not going to be overwhelmed. Ton of their guys, Donaldson, Freeman, have great experience. Not just those two, but Brian McCann has a ton of experience behind the plate. Markakis has been through the playoff wars with Baltimore and Atlanta. So they have plenty of experience. I think that this is going to come down to two things. Can the Cardinals win a game where Jack Flaherty is on the mound? And can they win that game in the Flaherty games because their big players are their best players when they need them to be?
Yeah, well, they're going to have to certainly score for him, and that's not something they've been great at doing, getting him run support. For tonight's game, one of the keys is going to be how Dallas Keuchel looks. He hasn't been great in his last three starts, but he's still been okay. If he has the changeup working, if his sinker is working, the Cardinals are going to have a very difficult time. They've been really good this year hitting the fastball, better than most other teams in the National League have. Only the Mets, Braves, Nationals, and Dodgers have been better hitting the fastball. But it's the off-speed stuff. It's the changeup they've had real trouble with. And it's the sinker they've had some difficulty, and the sliders they've had difficulty with. If Dallas Keuchel is good in those areas today, it's going to be really difficult for the Cardinals. So they're going to have to jump on fastball mistakes.
First team to get to three wins in this series is?
The winner.
The winner of the series is going to be.
Yeah. So.
What team?
Oh, Cardinals?
I like that pick. I wish I could make
Cardinals
it.
Cardinals in five. Are you not picking them?
No. I'm not.
You're going Braves?
I think Atlanta.
I'm going with hope, baby.
I love hope, and I am hoping. But objectively, I just think Atlanta has a better team.
If I'm going objectively, I'm with you. I'm just going with hope right now.
Okay, well, I can go with hope, and if I do, I'll go with the Cardinals in five.
So I'm right either way.
Can't go wrong.
Yeah.
But I just think that Atlanta is just, unfortunately for the Cardinals right now, a more talented ball club.
If Dallas Keuchel shoves today, I'm going to be PO'd.
Me too. Thanks to our producer, Brad Barnes, Mike Ryder, getting us on the air here. After the game and after ESPN's national postgame, I'll be back with a St. Louis postgame. Anthony Stalter will join me, and we'll hear from you after the Cardinals and Braves game one of the NLDS. For Ronj and I, until tomorrow at 2. Good afternoon, St. Louis. Enjoy the game.
Ready for a new and exciting career challenge? At DHL Supply Chain, you're part of a team committed to creating innovative solutions for some of the biggest brands in the world. We're recognized as a best place to work, where people are valued, supported, and respected. DHL Supply Chain is hiring for a wide range of salaried operational and functional roles. Previous experience in logistics is welcome, but not required. All opportunities, no boundaries. DHL Supply Chain. Apply today at joindhl.com.